Beyond UWA features inspiring graduates and friends from around the world. In their own words, we hear how UWA alumni from all walks of life are making an impact in the world as they share what they've learned along the way. I'm Kieran Hargraves, Director of Alumni and Community Engagement at UWA, and I hope you enjoy our latest episode.
Thank you, Kieran. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining in. Welcome to today's webinar brought to you by the Asia Alumni Network. My name is Tara Seth. I graduated from UW in 2012, and I've been the alumni leader for our Indian chapter for about a couple of years now. I currently work at Mercer Marsh Benefits as an EB consultant, and I'll be your host and moderator for today's topic, which is climate change and environmental sustainability. This subject is crucial to pursue in conversations since the next 10 years define a critical turning point wherein the lack of action can result in severe socioeconomic consequences, which significantly challenges human living conditions. It's now more important than ever to encourage participation from all professions of society to accelerate climate change mitigation by developing sound governance systems in line with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. But that's enough from me. I think we would like to hear more from our panelists. Before I introduce our fantastic panel, just a point for basic housekeeping. If you have any questions, any queries, please write it down in the chat via the Q&A tab. We'll get to your question after the panel discussion. So time to meet our panelists. In no particular order, we have Braden Lai from Singapore. Braden graduated from UWA's MBA program in 2010. He currently works at South Pole, name of the company, not the location, and leads and strategizes their digital solutions for APAC clients, where he focuses on delivering digital climate solutions to multi-sector corporates by helping them achieve their decarbonization pathways as per international standards. And we have Dr. Jesse Zheng from China, who is the co-founder and VP at Atmolite. He graduated from UW with a PhD in chemical engineering in 2017. He was involved in broader research in the energy sector during his PhD and postdoc research at UWA, which granted him the vision and the insights to global energy transition. His previous experience includes 5 years as a senior chemical engineer with Great Cell Solar Daisol, followed by 2 years as the head of chemical engineering with Bluestem. Prior to founding Atmolite, he was the director at Solar Department of Swalt Energy. So thank you, Braden. Thank you, Jesse, for joining today's panel. And let's get started with our first question to Braden. Braden, now you believe that data holds the solutions to complex challenges. In the context of climate change, how would data-driven insights help corporates accelerate towards that green transition and achieve those decarbonization pathways?
Yeah, thanks, Tara. Thanks for the introduction. So again, very honored to be in this webinar as well. So in my daily kind of like interaction with the corporation, as you rightly mentioned, I mean, from the urgency to mitigate climate change is a big topic right now. And of course, corporations are actively pursuing decarbonization strategies from big enterprises to mid-sized enterprises, as well as consumers as of now. So in order to accelerate this transition, we do see that, you know, data is definitely one of the key starting point, I would say. And of course, as we all know that in many industries, data is actually viewed as, you know, the new goal, and especially in sustainability wise, the effect of having more insights into primary data of your business operations is really the key to start your journey, for example. So in many of our discussions with corporations, you know, the understanding of this data and having the access to this data is very key to pretty much quantifying your organization's environmental impacts. And that's normally the starting point to understand where you are, and of course, that's your decarbonization roadmap and your pathway to net zero. And in that aspect, I mean, there's always this, I would say, this urgency for organizations to quantify, you know, to go into their scope 1 emissions, to go into their scope 2, and eventually manage their scope 3 emissions to understand the current status, the status quo of where they are before they can actually set up a target to and a roadmap to start to look at decarbonization as well. Likewise, The industry is also maturing in terms of a lot of organizations have started to look at disclosure as part of their alignment of their pathways, and to be able to align themselves to international standards like science-based targets, and that's very key matrix to encourage individual industries from hard to abate sectors like your manufacturing, your mining sectors as well, and of course the travel sectors, to really start to manage and understand this data and using it to track progress, right? So for example, a corporation's really can use primary data and to understand their power consumption right now, their energy consumption, and find out ways to identify opportunities to implement energy efficiency measures. At the same time, also even looking at identify opportunities to do waste reduction in their manufacturing process. So all these are kind of like processes, but at the same time, the starting point of it is really gathering all this data from your organization, and that's what we see as the starting point. And we are also seeing that sustainability efforts are also require all this data to do their reporting alignment to GRI or SBTI, for example. And we see that therefore, in order to track your yearly progress and to make sure that you are also on track to reach your corporate climate targets and ambition, definitely we have to take a data-driven approach in order to achieve and accelerate this transition.
Thank you. In fact, you mentioned net zero, and I wanted to touch upon that. You speak to clients about their sustainable strategies and how these digital solutions can accelerate that transition. Now, how do we harness these digital solutions so that we can achieve that pathway for decarbonization towards net zero?
So a big part of what I do is digitization, right? So within my organization, we have basically digitized a lot of the offering that we basically formulate from a consultancy point of view to the decarbonization solution, right? So what we do is we condense it into consumable platforms and software solutions. So why do we do that? I think what we are seeing is digital solutions is actually more and more becoming a key enabler in order to scale the impact and to accelerate the path towards decarbonization. So if you think about it, net zero by 2050 is a mere 27 years away, and we have to mobilize a lot of effort, what you mentioned, not only from a corporate standpoint, government policies, consumers have to be on this journey. And we see that digitization or using the use of the digital solutions is really a way for as an enabler to accelerate and scale this impact across all industries and to actually create this this transition as well. So in our daily engagement, engagement with clients, the use of digital solutions include things like adopting carbon accounting software. So right now, with just purely understanding the data and churning out what is your footprint from a manual way, is something that is being done. But of course, if you want to scale your solution across all industries and across your all sides of your manufacturing purview, the use of digital solutions is definitely a great enabler to do so, right? So not only can this help to collate all this data and do analysis about the pathways, they can also use it to adopt different strategies and do visualization of how such consumption of this data can be using digital solutions to visualize the pathway forward as well. So right now, even what we do, adopting AI technology and machine learning, is able to allow us to create more granular emission factors that will enhance the utilization of these insights for corporations to basically by plugging the emission factors across different taxonomy, different database, we are able to refine the visualization of your pathway, and you can even sharpen this benchmark with the strategies with peers around the industry as well. So in that aspect, right, I mean, that's just kind of like one area that we see digitalization playing a big role in terms of decarbonization and helping corporations to envision their sustainability strategy. On the other spectrum, we also see that digital solutions are very much also used for businesses to start offering beyond value chain mitigation. So what do I mean by that? So for example, if you are e-commerce space, we also have digital solutions that can help to communicate your sustainability agenda with your consumers, for example. So for example, in our daily work, we use APIs to quantify basically the measurement of activities. So for example, if you are traveling from Perth to say Singapore, and you can actually quantify your carbon emissions for the flight itself, and that can be used. We can use digital solutions to make sense of the carbon footprint for travelers. And at the same time, we are seeing that more and more consumers, businesses are actively pursuing and taking responsibility for this carbon emissions as well. And we on the API itself, we connect to projects and climate financing as a part of a way to basically fund your climate action and basically reduce and mitigate such impact you are carrying out these activities as well. I think that's where we see many exciting space as well, and many corporations embracing digital transformation to achieve the green transition. And we are helping daily on to enable this as well.
I think something that you rightly said, actually using digital solutions, and I'm pretty sure I can speak for everyone when I say that we are at a time where digital solutions are required and are almost imperative to businesses, irrespective of the industry. I mean, I use it too in my industry as well. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And what you said about how the solution can support not only internal growth and internal understanding, but also then also project that to consumers so that, use this, similar solutions. Exactly. To communicate to consumers. I have more questions, but I know that I do also want to ask Jesse for his opinion. So we'll come back to questions to you, Braden. And do encourage the audience to please put down your questions in the Q&A. I do know a couple of people have raised their hand. I would request you to put down your questions in the chat. I think that would be really helpful. We will come to your questions at the end of the session. Jesse, over to you. The first question that I have for you is actually understanding a little bit more about your journey. So tell us about the part that inspired you to establish the company Atmolite. Was it a passion for sustainability? Was it a business opportunity? Was it a bit of both? What I'm trying to understand is that how do you strike that balance between your goals and sustainability goals and then maintaining a profitable business? So your thoughts on that.
Sure. Thank you, Tara. And thank you for having me to this webinar. It's great, very great honor for me to share my story and share my opinion here. My work is in solar technology, so which is closely related to renewable or sustainable energy supply. So I think it's a perfect opportunity for me to share something here. So back to the question, I would probably answer your question in two parts. First of all, my story or why I'm founding this company. So I think number one is why I'm working on renewable energy. So before I started my PhD at UWA, I actually worked 5 years in Australia. Back then, I was working on an early version of solar technology. So there, I actually get a chance to closely learn the sustainability theme and realize how important this sustainability is to human beings or people's lives. And then I decided to devote my effort into this renewable energy sector and choose solar as my career path. I actually found it the seed that what I'm going to do for the rest of my career. And then I consider myself as an engineer. So I would like to say my knowledge and my expertise become something like a real product that actually benefits people's lives, actually can change something, rather than staying in paper as numbers or as figures And so I was kind of actively looking for opportunities to actually commercialize the technology or the expertise I had during my study. So luckily, I found some people who, and some investors, obviously, they feel the same and they would like to do the same thing. So I would say, in my case, founding the company, it's probably from the, I would say, a majority is from the passion of sustainability or the passion for addressing sustainability problems, rather than looking for a chance to making money. Or I mean, founding this business is just the way for me to carry out the my idea to
your goals.
Right. Okay. And then the second question, if I remember, is how do I balance this business and how to making positive impact and also try to maintain a healthy business, right?
Absolutely.
Sure. I think as Braden just said, we have this theory vision by 2050, this goal there. So in my case, we just try to install more renewable energy that's on the supply end. You know, as long as we have more renewable supply, then we will be easier or closer to the goal. So we cannot talk about sustainability without mentioning the sustainable energy supply. And exactly what we need every day. And in my company, what we're doing is trying to provide green, cheap, and easily accessible energy to everyone, everywhere. So what we do is we harvest the solar energy, which is green and also sustainable, obviously. And then we, using our technology, we're working on a new revolutionary technology. So using our technology, we could cut the current electricity price by half, which would obviously by having a higher efficiency and lower manufacturing cost compared to the existing one. So that's what existing technology cannot deliver. And also we could provide modules using both an outdoor solar farms, and it can be used on indoor consumable electronics. And it can be flexible, it can be rigid, it can be integrated into buildings, and also can have colorful colors. So basically, it can be used everywhere, it can be using pretty much many forms. So that would provide energy easy to be harvested and easy to be accessed by everyone, no matter the rich or poor. Where they're living, they can get the solar energy easily. But and then for the business, I would say, like I said earlier, that our business is a kind of revolutionary new technology, and we don't really have much competition at this stage. We basically just focusing on ourselves. And the company now is doing quite good. We are leading the industry in terms of commercializing progress. So I wouldn't worry about the profit healthy needs of this company as long as we keep making technological advancement. I would say the business would look after itself. I think that's my answer.
Got it. I think definitely what I've taken away from this is that there is demand, whether, as you said, and it's across regions, across the personas of your customers, where, as you said, whether rich or whether poor, whether in any parts of the reach of geography as well. So there clearly is demand for something which is available at low manufacturing cost and can be provided in a flexible solution as well. So definitely I see that that sounds easy on paper, I'm sure it took you a while to get there, but I'm really happy to know that this is something that is people are appreciative of it, even on the consumer side. So But coming back to the technology, and you talked, when we spoke recently, you talked about thin film photovoltaic technology, solar cells, right? So this new solar technology that you're working on, how does it compare to the existing silicon technology? How does it change people's lives?
This is a essential technology, as you mentioned. It's fairly new. It's only invented in 2009, and it's only 14 years of history. But the in level, the efficiency is already comparable to the existing silicon technology, and it has a higher theoretical limit. So, which means we can continue to push the bar, which we can produce more electricity on the same piece of land. That actually give you the basic capability to lower the energy price, and also it requires much less energy to manufacture. The whole process only doesn't need a temperature higher than 150 Celsius. And if you know about the silicon technology, the silicon reduction process requires temperature 1400 or 1500. That's a very energy extensive process. So generally, the energy payback time is our technology, is only like
one-fifth of the existing one. So that
actually gives you the capability to keep
lowering the energy costs. And also this new technology, it can be because it's very thin, we say it's thin film, so it's less than 1 micron thickness. So it can be deposited on a very flexible substrate. So basically, you can make it on your like a texture doses, and also the flexible and transparent substrates. And so that enables it to be installed everywhere on building, consumable electronics, but also you can compare to the existing one to be installed in the large area solar farm. So I would say by having this possibilities and higher energy, lower cost, we could cut the energy, like I said earlier, we could cut the electricity price by half. So people having more energy, people can use the energy cheaper, and then what like I said earlier, we try to install more solar energy or renewable energy. As long as we put more there, then we are able to achieve this zero emission goal. So I think that enables people to have from everywhere they can access to cheap energy. And that helps our society move towards a decarbonized and sustainable future.
Got it. I think the points that I take away from this are understanding that not only is it easy to produce en masse, I mean, and of course, also from a cost perspective, it is much cheaper and easier to actually, clearly disperse. So no wonder, I mean, that it is definitely a much more viable option when you compare it to the silicon technology. Thanks for that. In fact, I had a question, if I may ask. This is a question for Jesse. Jesse, what have you been in any conversations with, let's say, government bodies who have actually come and spoken about and raised concerns? I mean, I would say actually not concerns, I would say demands to get this as a platform to provide from a public perspective, you know, to provide clean energy to their nations. Is this something that you've been in conversations with government bodies for that?
Yeah, sure. I would take China as example. China has this ambitious plan, which is 2030, we have reached the carbon neutral, and
2060 to reach carbon zero. But it's kind of late to compare to the 2050 zero emission goal. But consider China is a big company and it's kind of developing country, so it's quite ambitious in my opinion. So now China every year is installing 150 gigawatt solar panels, which is the number one renewable energy now in China. they already surpassed by hydropower and also nuclear power and also the wind power. So now it's becoming number one in renewable energy.
Compared to the other renewable energy I mentioned earlier, for example, the hydropower, you need not
available everywhere. You need resource. And the wind power, it has noise and high maintenance, higher
transporting cost,
installation cost. So solar power is actually
much easier to be installed everywhere, to integrate into buildings,
on the rooftops. So China now is considered solar as the number one path of the priority.
As to reach this commitment. So we've been
in talk with government bodies. They are very positive and they are very
keen to get this installation sort of manufacturing capacity growing faster. And we actually, that's why the economy is growing quite fast, because we have the government support, we have this, as long as you working on renewable energy, working on solar
energy, you get a quite good support in China. Also, besides that, I would say the technology I'm working on is actually becoming a global research focus. We know that in Europe and also in the US, there are several companies working on the same thing. They
also provide large panels. They are
also have very good support from the local government.
So that's what I can contribute on this. I say
in solar sector, local government are very supportive. They give you land, they give you even the pouring money for you to
get this growth. For other renewable energy sectors, I think it's similar, but I don't know the details.
No, I think that was very helpful. And I think that the onus is on governments across the globe. I mean, not just, of course, China, not, of course, just Asian countries, but across the globe to be actually taking that progressive step to even talking about the public power systems that need to be re-looked at. And of course, this is something, there is the UN that has set aside those goals. And of course, there is the 10-year the 10-year span that we see ahead, which is critical to us. So I know that action needs to be taken very quickly. So thank you for that. Braden, coming back to you, I had a question for you as well. And I want to talk about data for a second. We talked about collection of data and understanding, I mean, how it would be pertinent from corporate to corporate. Now, I think you maybe briefly touched upon it, and if you could just expand on benchmarking. I'm sure corporates themselves would want to understand that, what are my peers doing? Could you maybe, if you're comfortable, could you talk a little bit about how would you provide benchmarking solutions from a climate sustainability point of view to from an industry to industry perspective?
Yep, that's a good point. I mean, we do work with corporations, of course, around the region, and of course, disclosure is a big part of this this journey, right? So, in the market, there are organizations, non-profit organizations like CDP. Of course, they are pretty much a disclosure body, and then corporates voluntary disclose their impact for them to access. So on a yearly basis, for example, if you are working in the manufacturing sector, companies put in their their environmental impact to be accessed. And through the assessment, right, I mean, you can understand where you fit in your industry, and that is really one of the key ways that people can start looking at the benchmark of the industry, and how they can then put in more strategies and understand and learn from the best practices in the industry to kind of like accelerate everyone's transition towards this this journey, right? So we do see that disclosure is really very important in this aspect as well. And of course, that has is one of the way kind of like to encourage these different sectors to who are already on a different path of their journey to start looking at the entire strategy and start planning ahead, right? So for example, you know, how can I really be the top of the class in my industry in terms of sustainability angle? And we do see that corporations are driven from a top-down approach, even sometimes from the board of directors to the shareholders, more and more of them are demanding the corporations to relook at this and deep dive into this strategy. And there are a few angles, right? So one is to basically to start to look at the performance of the organization and the products test to be future fit, basically to be able to address a growing consumer-based are more and more climate conscious. But at the same time, we are also seeing that governments are playing a big role in this as well. So governments have set up policies, as you can see that every country now has pretty much committed to NDC that they have to hit. Basically, like for example, to meet their own country targets, for example. So they are also putting in measures and policies to ensure that corporates are aligned with this as well. So this is not just kind of like a PR kind of exercise, but more of tangibly transiting your business to future fit yourself for a low carbon future as well. So we do see that the disclosure part is a big angle that corporations are actually leveraging on.
In fact, what you said, I love that line, that it's not just something that is fallible. It's actually tangible. Yes. This is not something that's just like a CSR activity. Yes, this is exactly. Actually something that is a long-term tangible goal. I think that's that really answers my question. Thank you for that. And I know that we have a couple of questions in Q&A. So before we head there and without taking too much time, I do have one last question, as in fact, for both of you. And Braden, we'll go with you first. What suggestions? Advice, or just what tips would you have for our audience members, those who are passionate about addressing climate change, but they're possibly not sure how to incorporate that into their daily routine? What would you recommend for them?
Yep. So again, when I talk about what we do on the, you know, in terms of the daily engagement with the corporations, I think more importantly, we do see that sustainability is team sports, and it's a long kind of like a long journey. It doesn't just involve governments or the big corporations, for example. I think every individual has a responsibility as a citizens of the planet to do your individual part to basically look at sustainability and how small action can actually kind of like scale up to this movement as well. So we do see that in terms of, like, for example, on a day-to-day basis, and this has been a kind of like a frequent discussion with my colleagues as well, in terms of how can we actually do our part in terms of bringing individual sustainability efforts to basically walk the talk as well. So in that sense, for example, on a daily basis, we make a prudent effort to kind of like look at into how can we start saving energy. So for example, when you leave the office, we make sure that the office lights are closed and everything, that, you know, we do small stuff like that. And we also have looked into recycling as one of the key levers. So we look at we have formed a sustainability committee to kind of look into how we can basically bring recycling into the office as well. And of course, the other part of it is really what I truly believe in is to reduce our personal footprint as well. So instead of like driving, can we actually take public transport or even back to the office? And small things like these are basically good levers to start off. And I'll say that it will be really points that we can the audience can take away as well.
In fact, just on a personal note, I'm constantly switching off lights at home, so much so that my family has told me that, look, we can't live in the dark. We need a couple of lights on for sure. But yes, exactly. I mean, whatever we can do, the little steps that we do, along with the large steps that our governments and corporates do, I think that can lead to positive change. So thank you, Braden. Exactly. Jesse, same question. How does one incorporate environmental responsibility into our daily decisions? decision-making?
Sure. I think Braden said it was pretty much very good.
This is a good question that I think everyone here joining this webinar they care about this planet. They want to achieve sustainable societies. And I think everyone's here can start from very small things. In China, we say it's no good, it's too small to be done. So we just start from very little things, like
Braden said. Saving energy and try to recycle things, and
also try
in your daily work. Maybe if you can just
in my case, I started a company just trying to push this new technology into commercialization. But in a parallel world, I can be an engineer just sitting in a lab and just doing some little technological advancement, just doing little R&D, but that also helping the society to achieve sustainability, that also move this thing going forward. So you don't have to think too much ambitious goals and things and try to do all of them once. You can just start from bigger things and the opportunities are everywhere, and they will present themselves and just save some of them and try to do your contribution, do your part. And it's really a team sport. We all holding hands and we all having this will to
get it done. I think we can get it this sustainable target, net emission zero. So I think that will be my answer.
No, absolutely. I think it is the little steps, and as they say, small step for man. So we start small, but at least we start somewhere. I think that definitely answers that. And audience members, please do put in your questions, anything that is on your mind, any thoughts, or maybe perhaps you have a different perspective. So please put that down in the Q&A, put that down in chat, and we'll come to that shortly. Braden, Jesse, anything that you would like to add as part of your closing remarks, would be happy to hear from you. Or of course, then we can move on to Q&A.
I think it is a good session. I think what the thing that, I mean, of course, we are because we are in this sustainability industry, of course, we are helping to champion this topic. And I think that is kind of sometimes it can be a bit lonely in terms of like trying to bring this topic to the market and things like that. But we are seeing that there's more and more awareness, and the movement is getting more momentum. So I think it could be a great platform for us to share, and of course to be exposed to different industries, different viewpoints, and of course to actually encourage, and a great session to kind of like learn from one another, because it's again. No single individual can achieve this, or no single company itself can achieve this. So as I said, it's really a movement that we need to galvanize everyone's efforts and really create this momentum in order for us to solve the biggest challenge for the humanity for the 21st century.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's so many concerns that people talk about, but honestly, this is just the one planet we have. So yeah, absolutely. A critical topic of conversation. Jesse, please close this off for us.
I think it's a very good webinar. And also by taking this chance, I actually learned quite a few things and educated myself.
So previously, I focus on the sustainability on sustainable energy supply. So because that's what I'm working on. So it's very, my view was very narrow. I was just looking at how to make more power. But last time we talked, and then I talked to Daniel as well. So he actually told me this by UN definition, there's 18 topics regarding this sustainability. And I had a look. It's not only about sustainable energy supply, there's a whole lot of things and aspects people can
work on, can address this
sustainability issue. So
that actually I learned from this session,
and I learned from this experience. So thank you guys, and I think very good.
Thank you. And in fact, yeah, actually, we've not even covered a fraction of the goals that the UN has actually set down for us. And I know this is just the start of a big conversation that, well, we have begun within Asia. But yes, I thank you so much for your time, gentlemen. This has been a wonderful session. I really thank you for taking out the time, for taking us through your journey and expertise. Thanks so much. We will go to questions. I know there's actually, I think, a question for Braden. I'm just going to open that up. Yes, it's from Daniel Cheng, who asks, based on your experience, what is the biggest incentive for businesses to spend on climate change efforts? And then conversely, what is the biggest hindrance? What is the largest hindrance?
Right. So great question. I think the biggest incentive for business to look into basically climate mitigation is really, I would say, future-proofing your business. So in terms of what we see right now, I mean, growing number of in terms of like from a regulatory perspective, from a consumer perspective, there is a trend to drive towards a more sustainable company in terms of reducing your environmental footprint. So why do I say so? Because in our daily, in our dealings with a lot of the clients, I mean, what they are doing right now is really future-proofing. I know they know that regulations are coming. They know that consumers are demanding products that are, more sustainable, and in terms of their sourcing, in terms of manufacturing process, and the delivery of this to the consumers are also important in terms of that. So in due time, we are seeing that corporations that basically pivot and look into this and deploying sustainability strategy for their entire business will basically turn out more profitable, I would say, and more, in terms of getting consumer loyalty, in terms of growing your business, is going to be much more. And of course, this is what we see in a lot of the market and a lot of discussion that we've discussed as well. And the other part of it is we have seen sustainability is also a way to basically differentiate ourselves from the competitors, right? So there are a lot of discussion about how can you bring a different product or a different branding to your business. And I think sustainability is really a great way to start engaging consumers, to start engaging businesses, where when you start to deal with big corporations, and when they have a commitment, for example, when you're supplying products to an organization that has a net zero commitment, your supplier's emissions is fall under the scope 3 of their emissions as well. So there's a cascading effect to the suppliers as well. So that will also be one of the factors that we see that is kind of like a criteria for selection of vendors as well. So all in all, I think the trend is moving towards the direction, and why not start right now when the tools and technologies are available and the expertise are also available in the market. So on the other side, what is the hindrance of this is really I think as I mentioned, the technology, we have the technical know-how. Basically, everything is available to do the transition, but we see that the pace of the transition is actually not fast enough in what we have engaged with. Right? So, I mean, at various especially in the region where I'm managing APEC, right? So, we have seen like countries that are more forefront in terms of their sustainability agenda, like for example, Singapore, Australia, Japan, they have basically put in place policies to drive corporations to decarbonize as soon as possible. But of course, different economies are developing at different stages. So we do have, we see that they are also looking at the urgency is basically different in terms of implementing certain strategies and basically implementing policies to ensure that this transition is fast enough, right? So I think that can be something which is something that we can actually look at. And of course, in order for us to eventually reach net zero by 2050, I think everyone has to be putting the put an effort into decarbonization and strategy for the corporations, right? So we see, I think, the policies and maybe a bit of the I'll say the different stages of implementation is kind of like the hindrance to basically the transition and accelerating towards this direction. Yeah,
definitely. But then clearly the pros outweigh the cons.
Yep.
So
I
really hope, Daniel, we could answer your question. Of course, if you have a follow-up question, please go ahead and type that in the chat box. And if there is anyone else, any other questions at all, please feel free to type that in. We do have the next question from Dan. He's not mentioned who this question is for, so open to both of you. Have businesses been setting targets in order for them to achieve their net zero goals? I think, Braden, this would be for you.
Yep. Yes. So the in our journey, right? I mean, in terms of how we are doing the advisory work for clients, companies would need to kind of measure measure their footprint to understand where they are right now, to be able to then be able to set a target. And of course, this normally is a science-based target that we recommend. So once you have the target, then you know what's your decarbonization pathway. Then you look into your energy consumption, basically your manufacturing process, and how you can manage the reduction and start to manage your suppliers as well. So for that, we have basically what we call a climate journey to kind of like guide the corporations towards that as well. So in most of the cases, we see that in order for corporations to eventually reach ambition and basically set a target, definitely we need basically a target to reach. And then, of course, that will let them understand what is their pathway and how they can put in the strategies in order to reach their pathways, right? So that is exactly what this entire journey is about, and we are there to basically advise clients on a day-to-day basis through consulting or through digitization of things to actually accelerate towards this as well. So same for everyone. I mean, if you would like to lose your weight, you need to know kind of like what is your ideal weight. And similarly, for a company to reduce their corporate target, you do need to have a target in order to understand how to create strategies to reach that pathway as well. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. And Daniel, I hope we have answered your question. If there are any other questions, happy to take that now. We do have a couple of minutes before we close for today. And of course, Jesse or Braden, if there's anything that you would like to add further, please feel free to go off mute and please give us your thoughts on that. I think there was a question pertinent to UWA. Kiran, would you like to answer that hey, Kiran, would you like to answer that question, which has come through from Jerry?
Sure. Yeah, Jerry, thanks for your question. I'm definitely not an expert on this area, but I do know that the School of Earth Sciences has been doing some research in this space, and that's around sedimentary rocks and them being porous, and with the ice sheets sort of coming over top, what effect that will have on increasing the water volume that comes out quite quickly. UWA also does have the Oceans Institute, which looks into maritime research and protecting the ocean, sort of especially within the Indian Ocean Rim as well. So happy to send some information about that in the follow-up comms if that would be useful.
Thank you. And I think we should be mindful that I know we are closing on time. So we just take, I think, any last thoughts from the panel. But otherwise, we're good to close. And Kiran, then I'll hand it over to you. Jesse, Braden, thank you so much once again. And I thank the audience as well for listening in, for joining in today. Thank you so much for your time. Kiran, over to you.
Thanks, Tara. Thanks, Braden and Jesse. What a fantastic discussion. I know I've definitely learned a lot today, and I hope everyone online has as well. Some really great insights into the discussion. I hope everyone's leaving feeling a bit more inspired about how we can build a more sustainable future together. Thank you, everyone who's watching now, but also those who'll be watching and listening later. This is going to be a podcast later, so we look forward to sharing the insights with our wider alumni population as well. Don't forget, wherever you are in the world, update your details so you can get invited to events just like this one that are based in your region and your location, and get information about things that are happening at UWA and also the alumni network as well. So huge thanks again to our panel, to Tara, Braden and Jesse. And thanks, everyone. Have a great evening.